All right, we'll go ahead and call the meeting to order. We'll start with Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, everybody, for coming out. We'll start off. Is there any additions, deletions, or corrections to the agenda? Hearing none, I would take a motion to approve.
Make the motion to approve.
Thank you, Ryan.
Second.
Thank you, Brian. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Consent agenda. Is there any item on there anybody would like to discuss? Not, I would take a motion to approve.
Motion to approve.
Thank you, Ryan.
Second.
Thank you, Brian. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, everybody.
I just want to make one note on that.
Yes.
There was a clarification, so that for Sarah, that would be grade eight, step four.
Okay.
So I had updated that in the memo.
Oh, yes. All right, next is visitors to the council. John Wade.
Evening. Thank you for having me. My name is John Wade. I'm president of Rochester Area Economic Development. We are partners with CASN, and we wanted to take the opportunity to come here and share the work that we are doing jointly. We appreciate very much your involvement. We started this actually with some of your CASN staff a couple of years ago, deciding that we needed to make a greater emphasis outside of just Rochester proper, because Rochester proper alone can't survive without the 45, just about 50,000 people a day who go into the city of Rochester to work. And the neighborhood, as I like to refer to it, is critically important to that community's continued growth and development. We continue to see, we just released a couple surveys. We released a banking study today that was done by 12 bankers representing billions of dollars worth of investment in the area. While they're cautious, and this is going to be published, has it been out today yet? Anyway, it'll be out tonight or tomorrow. We have the results. And we pay a lot of attention to what those banks look at, because they're kind of a canary in the mine. They see trends or other things. And they continue to present an optimistic view. We are not underwater on car loans. You know, there's a number of big macro things kind of going on in the marketplace. Our banks tend to act very responsibly. We're not seeing a lot of, we watch consumer debt. We like, you know, look at a lot of those things. That's a very favorable report. When I sit on with a group of people in my job from Greater MSP, the metro area, Duluth, St. Cloud, Mankato, and Rochester, we are by far in the best economic shape of most in the state. And that is, you know, witnessed billions of dollars worth of development, not only by the healthcare sector, but interestingly enough, in our market, which is the MSA, the Metropolitan Statistical Area, which includes Dodge County, Olmsted, Wabasha, and Fillmore counties, the legal definition and designation, we continue to see really very, very strong growth. We, through June of this year, we grew 6.7% employment, which is over 7,000 new jobs were created in this MSA. That's remarkable growth. So that's a little over 4% growth. We believe that we should be around 3 or 4% optimally. And again, this is as a region. This is as that MSA, the four counties, and that's the economy we pay attention to. So we continue to have pressures that you're well aware of, although lessening to a certain degree. Interestingly, a workforce remains a huge issue, but not as dramatic. Our businesses seem to be able to find the people that they need to grow. There's a lot of technology and other things that are probably assisting that. We continue to see a great deal of pressure on housing. You guys are doing a lot to address that here and doing everything you can do to address that issue. And much of that marketplace, while it's continued to grow dramatically, has been because of apartment building. And as we bring on all those apartment units, they are, we're short 10,000 housing units. So, I mean, think about 10,000 housing units. and to keep up with that is very, very challenging, and one of the ways the market has addressed that is through apartments. And that's why we're seeing this tremendous amount of building and development of apartments. So that's a very positive picture today. Now, things can change tomorrow. But if we could continue to grow for the rest of all of our careers, even you younger people, if I could take a deal today and say we'll grow forever at 3 to 4%, that would be a very good thing. I don't really want to turn up the, you know, not that I can, but you don't really want to turn up that temperature to 6 and 7%, because then we can't keep up with it. We don't have the developable land at the same rate. We don't have housing, tremendous pressure on our education system. I also want to thank you guys, because Casson continues to be widely recognized as having a great school system.
Oh.
And yes. And when it's interesting, right, that we recruit CEOs from around the world to come run startup companies. It's a big challenge we have. And when we sit down with those folks, it's interesting, often from pretty well-heeled areas, what do they really want to know about? They want to know that we have the workforce, you know, coming out. We have community colleges that are very, very important to doing that, and unions, and other training programs. But one of the things that is very, very important to people is the quality of our school systems. And we are going to, on our website, raedi.com, if you want to look at a lot of data sometime, we are going to add on the area schools achievement as well into that, because we have so many people asking about it. Because when people come here, they don't necessarily want to live in Rochester proper. They want to live in the market. And of course, to a lot of people who come here from other places, this is nothing. You know, this kind of drive, which I say, oh, I'm going to Casson tonight, like I'm going on a big trip. It's like nothing. And that's why it's very important. It's very important that you have great communities and great police departments and all those things that make that. I'm going to go so slow going out of town. But I just, this happened to me in Chatfield once and they, after a meeting. But the quality of the community that you run is vitally important to what we are able to do from an economic development standpoint. To bring it back home, one of the commitments we made to you, and I remember doing this a couple years ago, that was to establish a communities council. And we had done that, and Casson has served as an anchor tenant to that group. It is several cities, not Rochester, in the area, because we had more like needs. We discussed development in the communities, we discussed challenges related to that, and it is all either the city administrator or economic development directors. You are well represented there on a very consistent basis. We very much appreciate that. And then their peers from a number of various cities, I think there are 9 right now. And I think one other is looking at joining that. And we are also putting a little bit of our money where our mouth is. You do pay us, and we appreciate your investment in Rochester area economic development. But we are currently advancing a study. I know these guys know that. But we are currently advancing a study, and it's going to be about $20,000, to look at the economic development needs of the region. Hmm? So then we can provide you better information as you grow forward. And then how we can better support you. You know, is that other financing tools? We administer a lot of deed tools and other things that when people want to grow and develop, but a lot of that comes out of your own community as you expand utilities and have more police officers and all the other things you have to do to run this place. But we want to make sure that we're giving all the tools necessary. We're also going to partner with Smith on that proposal. We're going to have some funding for them to really look at how we can better serve the communities that are most important to this metropolitan statistical area. And Casson's an anchor tenant of that. So it's a good opportunity also for those cities to get together and talk about, well, I'm having a challenge with this or that. And we all know it's competitive. Everyone would like a business to go here instead of Stuartville or wherever that might be. But at the same time, we have more things in common than we have, opposed. And I think it's a really wonderful thing to bring people together, because I think we're stronger together. So we created an economic development model that is very unique, where we are, and we also apply staff to that. We have Kirk Boostrom is his name, who is a certified economic development director. He's got 30 years of experience around the state with deed and the federal EDA and all kinds of things. He staffs it. Molly Schmidt from our staff also supports that effort. And then, of course, we actually work for the council, essentially, and we are very careful. We don't run the meeting. We frame the meeting. The chair of the board is a rotated, I think we did it in alpha order. So Byron was supposed to go first. It was Chatfield because he didn't want to. Now it's going to be him, and then it's going to rotate through, and I'm not sure when Kay comes up in a couple years. So it's the citizen leadership of the communities that drive the agenda and the work that that group does, not what we say. It's a great way to do it. But we work collaboratively. I'm very proud of that initiative. I think we've seen, and we will continue to see growth. Some of you may be aware that there is movement to create a regional development organization, an RDO, it's called. There are 9 in the state. There are 2 regions that do not, well, actually 3, but 2 officially that do not have it, St. Cloud and the 11 counties in southeast Minnesota. There's Region 9 gets a lot of attention. That's over to our west. And, Minneapolis doesn't, but they have the Met Council. So they have a lot of other planning layers. So there is a discussion going on about, and I know you guys are tracking that, about should we look at a regional development organization for 11 counties. And we are staying involved in it. We work very closely with CETA and SMIF and other organizations to really look and make sure, first, do we need it? 2, are you willing to pay for it? Because the way that model works ultimately is every county pays an apportioned share into it. And if you're a big county, well, the biggest county gets 2 votes. They have 2 county commissioners that are, this is not because I want it that way, it's by statute. And they also pay a ton of money. But even the smallest county might pay as much as $40,000 a year. Big county could pay hundreds of thousands of dollars. So this is not an easy lift. It's got to make a whole lot of sense, and there's a lot more to come in that discussion. But it's something you'll keep your eye on because it'll happen. I may be retired by the time it happens, but there's discussion about that. My point tonight is to thank you, appreciate what you're doing, let you know as a council that your staff is doing a great job engaging with this region. They care deeply about this community, and they're passionate about it, and we are grateful for that. I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have. If there's something I've missed that you'd like me to talk more about, happy to do that, or I'll politely thank you for all you do, investing in us, and the work that you're doing. Anything else you'd like? Ask me something. Could you, anything? You're happy with anything you're doing? Is there anything else to do more of? Happy to. You can contact us through your representatives. We're happy to, or directly. With that, I thank you very much for the time to update you broadly speaking on the economy, and applaud your efforts. So thank you.
Thank you.
And a great police department. So I just want to say that as I'm driving carefully out of here tonight. So thank you. Okay.
Next, mayor's report. I have nothing for tonight. Public forum. We have 1 card. Sonia Thompson, come up to the podium. Name, address. And
my name is Sonia Thompson. My address is 1800 20th Avenue Circle here in Casson. Thanks for the opportunity to speak tonight. I'm coming here as a resident and also a member of 504 Ventures, which is building the apartment building on the corner of 16th Street and 5th Avenue. I want you to know that we were not aware that there were concerns regarding the 5th Street morning drop-off until I read a comment on Facebook, and it was referring to the superintendent's visit to the Planning and Zoning Commission. So after I saw that comment, I reached out to Superintendent Kesey, and she was very open and receptive to meet. So we greatly appreciate the opportunity for collaboration between the construction team and the school, along with you all as city leaders, as we work together to be good neighbors, ensure student safety, and allow the project to move forward smoothly. We were able to meet on site this morning with Superintendent Jeremy Lawson, who is the superintendent from Key Builders. And we discussed the issue to identify some mutually acceptable solutions that we could bring to you tonight as you look to review what planning and zoning is suggesting. So the one thing that, there were two things that came to my mind as I watched the video, because I wasn't aware it wasn't here. Number one, the fire chief, I don't know if it was exactly him or someone, mentioned that there was plenty of parking for construction along the side street, which happens to be the private drive, that the council said there would be no parking on. So there is not, there's not parking available there. The second thing is, we are for student safety. And that was the reason that I connected with the superintendent this morning. So we made a list of three real basic things that would help us all move forward in a positive manner. So the first thing is, if we could maintain the current parking as it is, that would help our construction staff. I understand that it is a challenge, so we talked about the concerns of busing radius and maintaining line of sight. So we talked about an acceptable distance from the corner that the superintendent on site would maintain a no parking zone. That he would enforce that, he would talk to all the subcontractors and let them know that they would not be parking there, end of story. Number two, a future adjustment. After July 2026, when the apartment would be hopefully fully filled up, that once that building opens and residents move in, we propose that there be a no parking zone on the west side of the street, which is the side next to the apartment, because that coincides with safe routes to school and some other things. Between 7:30 and 3:30, that would support student safety and provide some additional room on the street for that 15 to 20 minute crazy morning rush. And then the third thing being ongoing review, if after it is occupied, really, or at any time, if the expectations that we've set or the agreement that we've made that we're bringing to you to consider tonight are not being met, we are fully open to revisiting and adjusting the plan to coordinate with the city and the school to make sure we're all good neighbors, we're working together to ensure the safety of the students. So that's all I have. Thank you very much for your time and consideration.
Thank you.
No public hearing. Committee report, Planning Commission.
All right, so Planning Commission meeting on last week, Monday evening. We had a public hearing to consider,
the recommendation of parking show Fifth Avenue.
Well, it was not a public hearing, but yes, Superintendent Beth Giese came and spoke about the concerns with parking on Fifth Avenue Northeast. The Planning Commission gave a recommendation to essentially have the no parking between 7:30 and 3:30 on both sides of Fifth Avenue Northeast. There wasn't really a timeline put on that, I don't believe, during the discussion with the Planning Commission. But that's the recommendation that they are forwarding to council.
Yes. Would you like to give any more comments, Beth?
I apologize for the way I'm dressed. I'm on the way to volleyball. Yeah, we had a great meeting today, and there was some miscommunication. The person I was reaching out to wasn't probably the perfect person to be communicating with, and I do apologize for that. We stood out in the cold for a long time today, and we really looked at kind of give and take and what it would look like. I love what came from the meeting we had, but after discussing, there is nowhere for the construction vehicles to go, and we want to be good neighbors. I think I said it in that meeting that night. We're excited for the growth of this community. We're excited to bring kids in. I mentioned that one of your other apartment buildings brought in 8 students within the day it opened. That's a big deal. And this is how we continue to grow our amazing school district. So after we discussed today everything that she mentioned, I do concur with. I think it would be a great starting place. I think closing the west side allows me to still do safe schools. When there's no curb between the bike path, we receive some funding to go along with that. So it's important that it's the west side and not the east side. That allows our buses to swing the way we want them to swing, and not hit any vehicles that are sitting there. So again, kind of a plus for us. So I think they would have rather had it the other side, but at the end of it, we had a great meeting and I feel like we're in a good place. It also allows, some of the concern was pulling out, you're basically pulling onto the bike path to be able to look out. If there's no vehicles on either side, that's going to help with that as well. So I can certainly go along with the recommendation if that is, you know, up to the mayor and the council here for you guys to decide, but we are good with the amendments that you heard this evening. So
just to be clear, you're looking at no parking on the west side from 7:30 to 3, just to match the signs on 16th Street. And from which point?
3:30, I believe.
You want 3:30? Okay.
It would be best.
The signs on 16th Street are 3 o'clock, but
okay.
I can talk to the see if we can get that revised on the signage. But when would you like this to start?
We had a good conversation about that today with the construction vehicles not really having a place to go. We would be okay with July. We are rerouting our middle school students right now over to the elementary side. It's not a big biking season right now. Now we're going into winter. So we'll be okay until spring, and then we will have safety guards out there again in the spring once it gets nice and the kids get on their bikes. We'll route them to the east side, and then they will do the crosswalk over to the middle school.
So July of 26, you're comfortable with it until?
Right. We're out of school in May. So, I mean, honestly, August 26th or whatever it is would be great.
I'm sure they're hoping to be open before that, certainly.
I think we're all hoping. We're all hoping, yeah. We even discussed using a portion of our parking lot at the elementary for construction vehicles. We have very good cameras in that area, and that would be a possibility. They were a little bit concerned about their vehicles. They're big. They're oversized. You know, you've still got some things there. So I think the biggest fix was her point one. If we can go from 16th Street to past, you know, kind of that area to let our buses swing, and we're going to start that effective now. The superintendent that was out there was very firm that he would make that happen. I drove by later today and checked, and he had already moved the vehicles that were there.
So they're going to coordinate that component this time?
We are going to coordinate everything until July.
Okay, so we'll be implementing signage then when that period's
over. That would be our hope.
Okay.
We really feel strongly about the west side being clear so our kids can go back to riding their bikes to the middle school on the correct side.
Sure.
Correct.
Yeah, one concern I've got, early in the morning when the buses are coming and the kids are going, a lot of times the construction is going before, during that time.
Right.
Is there a way the construction crew can, I know they like to get going, but can they postpone or try to be a lot more careful? Because kids are not going to pay attention to the construction crews.
We do have...
I know you got barricades
there,
but kids are not going to pay attention to that either. If we can work with the construction crew to have them wait until doing anything major out there, until the kids are in school.
I can talk to Jeremy. He was really receptive.
Because you know what I'm saying, kids are not always going to follow the rule. And that age group, it's the elementary, a lot of times they're getting dropped off to middle school.
Yeah, we do have a lot of staff out there. We have 3 personnel that stand out there right away in the morning, but that, you know, that helps a little bit when they see adults standing there. But
oh, sure.
I can. I have Jeremy's number, and I can certainly contact him as well.
Nothing major that you're seeing that you're looking for?
There was just before we even put the barricades up, when they were first going there, they had the crane moving out, and they were unloading, and kids were walking right nearby it, under it. And that was before the city even got involved and got the barricades up there. And I just don't want that to keep going on. I mean, I haven't seen it since. I haven't heard about it, but I just like to make sure. So we put the notice out now just to make sure. It's better safe than sorry.
Absolutely. And I know that Key Builders have asked that the vendors keep their trucks out of the area until after 9 and before 3. I know that there were some things that we asked of them to make sure that we were respectful of it being a school area.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, I haven't heard any since the very beginning when it first happened, and I had a few people bring it up.
Okay.
on that.
So, Anya, do you know how long that crane is going to be out there?
It should only, I don't have the construction schedule, but I do expect it to be there until the roof is on.
Sure.
And I know that the estimation is a week for floor and then 2 weeks for the roof. So we've got the first floor on, so we probably have another 4 weeks, maybe up to six.
Thank you.
And the other idea you already brought up was parking the construction vehicles across in the school parking lot, you know. If they can unload and then take some over, you know, if they don't need to stagger that many over there. That was the only other option I had, but you already brought that up. Because that would help a lot.
Have a spot for them. If they're willing to do that, we can make a spot for that.
Because I think that would save, because some of them trucks when they come in there, or trucks and trailers, when you start blocking the sight line, you know, like today there was just a couple vans, but some days you get there and then you're going to have some bigger vehicles there, and that's when you're going to start losing your sight line.
And there won't, that sight line will not be a problem going forward, because I don't know if you want to see the map or the area that we talked about this morning.
Yeah.
I put together just something quick so you can see.
Yep. Thank you.
Yep.
I'll just share with Linda, that's okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Oh,
mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah. That will be nice.
Mm-hmm.
So basically to the,
yeah.
To the entrance,
mm-hmm.
or this exit,
yeah.
Where the stop sign was, is essentially, you know, where the construction site starts, so anything from 16th
to that point.
To that point should
okay.
be parking free. And Jeremy was very firm that he would enforce that, and so that, you know, as of immediately, they should not do this.
Oh, no, I like that. That's...
Okay, so just one more time for my clarity. The time-restricted parking would go into effect, say, August of 26, when the construction's done. And until then, the construction team and the school will work to maintain no parking in this area from the street down the 5th Street here in the time being. Is that...
That's my understanding, yeah.
All right. Well, then...
The action I'll be looking for would be a motion from council to proceed with those amended recommendations in terms of signage starting next summer.
And if you have any issues with the parking, you know, if it doesn't work for you, let the city know. We can come back and put the no parking in sooner. You know, if it doesn't work out for both sites, you know, if we start having issues. But other than that, I think we're fine. So I would take a motion with amendments to approve. And the amendments were no
during implementation until summer of 26, and then implementing no parking on the west side with the signage.
Yeah. So you can everybody follow that? So I would take a motion to approve that.
Should I be abstaining from anything since I work for the district?
You have a personal interest in this? I don't think it should be
no.
a problem.
No, I was the one that posted on Facebook that this meeting was happening, and I should have known better than to post on any Facebook page letting people know what's going on, because it just doesn't help, which is unfortunate, because all we're trying to do is help, but it just seems to make things worse every time you do try to help someone on Facebook. In this community, it makes it worse. And that's frustrating.
I was thankful to know so that we could at least connect, because given that there was a disconnect, I mean, she was trying to do her best, and we want to be good neighbors. So, I mean, it was a great opportunity. I understand what you're saying, but it worked out as well as it could have, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I had messaged Aaron back and forth yesterday after he had seen that as well, and it's disheartening on my end that people make such assumptions that we're getting kickbacks from this, and that there's a reason that we did all of this. It's to improve our community. Let's stop and think for a minute before we post on the internet that we were simply trying to support our community and someone that wants to improve our community. So let's think about that before we go on there and accuse council members and staff of wrongdoing.
I will take a motion to approve with amendments of listed.
I will make the motion.
Thank you, Ryan. Do we have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Brian. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. And I hope this all works out well.
Thank you.
Okay, next committee report, parkland dedication.
All right, so this was something that the council had discussed previously. Our consulting planner, Brad Scheib, did do some more research to come up with some ideas for parkland dedication. And so included in your packets this evening is a memo that Brad drafted. Just going through it here, it talks about just the process of parkland dedication as defined in state statute. It's also kind of guided by a comprehensive plan. So whenever we have a new plat that comes in, we review what the parkland needs are that come through. If there's a designated park area within the plat that's defined by our comprehensive plan, then we would consider an actual land dedication. If that's not the case and there's no designated park area within the plat, then we would consider a cash fee instead of the land, or some combination of land and a cash fee paid for that. So up until now, or at least as recent times go, the city has been charging a fee based on an approximate value of $12,000 per acre times 10%. So if you factor that in, it just works out based on that. And it's not based on like number of units or the type of housing. It's just a simple based on the acreage, and then you do this multiplication and you come up with the fee. And so the discussion that the council has had afterwards is kind of changing how we look at that. And so what came out of that discussion was changing the formula so that it is based off of a number of units, and then also determined on the actual type of units. So whether it's single family homes or a manufactured home or a smaller sort of townhome development or larger townhome development or apartments. So you can see in the memo there's some proposed numbers there. So we've got a $500 per unit for single family attached dwellings, $425 per unit for manufactured homes, or 2 to 5 unit single family attached dwellings, or $375 per unit for a multifamily units, 5 units or greater, and also single-family attached dwellings that are that size as well. So that does kind of change pretty significantly how we've been doing things up to this point, but if the council thinks it's a more equitable situation, I think as staff we'd be comfortable moving forward with this sort of arrangement as proposed. There's also some discussion in here about charging a parkland fee for commercial or industrial development, such as like $500 or $1,000 per acre. You could make the argument that that sort of development also draws demand to our park system. Just kind of depends how you think of it. But yeah, that's the recommendation here we've got from staff and the research that's been put into parkland dedication. If there's any questions.
Just for informational sake tonight, if you do have any questions, please let us know. I think the whole gist of it is that, in essence, the multifamily parkland fee would be a greater percentage compared to where it is currently versus the single family, which is kind of the lay of the land the council gave us to take a look at. So. A good example would be, you know, the Sand Company subdivision. Their apartment was on 2.5 acres, so the amount of actual parkland fee they pay is relatively small, where we have a lot of units. Whereas, say you had 2.5 acres in a regular single-family home development, you might have 5 units an acre or something like that. So it would
it would perhaps be more equitable, because the utilization would be greater for the park from someone who is necessarily maybe living in an apartment as opposed to someone who has their own yard. So I think that's just the kind of the overhaul scape of it, so.
I did want to add something from our prior conversation on this. I'm pretty in favor of us also charging for commercial properties, and I know I talked to you about that, Tim. If someone wants to open a business in Casson and they're that against promoting our community, like I would have concerns about that business being here in the first place. So if they're viewing that as a barrier to entry, I don't know that that would be the right business for us anyway. So that's just my two cents on whether we charge commercial, industrial or not. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Has Ben taken a look at these and talked about them at all with you guys? And does he feel like those fees are going to help?
You know, he has the numbers from our previous study when we looked at the needs assessment. You know, the issue we always run into is, you know, park dedication fees are never going to generate enough for the park system. I think, you know, the consultant feels like it's maybe a third, maybe 30% of the need. And so, I mean, we're always going to supplement that with funding. We'll be talking about that a little bit tonight, maybe. But I think, you know, we're certainly, you know, glad to segment those revenues out too and put them into a park fund. I think that's a good way to do it. And that way, you know, we can say, here's the direct benefit, you know, that park modular that would have been $50,000. Well, we have some funding available from the park dedication fees. So as we grow, we kind of try to put as much of that away as we can.
Definitely in favor of, I just don't want to raise all those rates and costs, but then not have a plan for them or think they're actually going to be beneficial.
Oh, I appreciate that. It's a good question.
I'll just reiterate an email I sent to Tim, just requesting some sort of numbers on, you know, what kind of deficit we've been running with our parkland dedication versus spending, and then what these changes would do for, you know, because I think we've had developments that meet all three of these criteria. We can look back and see what the delta would have been if we had done this before and see, you know, how much are we actually raising rates.
Yeah, I think that Brad did send some emails out to you today, Paul.
I saw him reply saying that he could do it. I didn't see if he...
Yeah, I think he attached some Excel spreadsheets there. So, and you take a look and let me know if you have any more questions. But, yeah, I know that we're not going to meet our goal of, you know, 100%.
Yeah, we were pretty low, I thought.
You know, it's just trying to do the best we can with it, so... But yeah, we'll be bringing this back for approval at a future meeting. There's revised method. I mean, it's in essence, we're going from acres to lots or to users. And it's kind of the same thing with like a franchise fee versus a property taxes. You know, how many users do you have versus how many people are, you know, it kind of captures all that aspect. So thank you.
Okay. Up next, old business, cannabis ordinance.
Including your package, you have a couple of items tonight. These are updates, just some of them are related to changes in the statute, but you can see there you've got an update included in your packet with the implementation and where they're at now. The low-potency hemp edible licensing closes at the end of this month, so we're expecting hopefully that process continues smoothly for those people participating. We also received our first application, and I don't know, Linda, if you want me to talk about that or if you want to discuss it. Yeah, I mean, if there's any questions on it, it's in your packet. You can kind of see what's there. It's the first application. It's for a cannabis micro business, which is retail and indoor growing. So this person's reached out to us. You know, they have their license registration, so they're looking at potentially opening a location here in Casson. They've identified a site they'd like to potentially purchase. It does meet our zoning requirements, both the current ones and the potential future ones that the Planning Commission's reviewing. So, you know, that's up for your consideration. You know, we kind of debated, you know, some cities are looking at council approval for these registrations, some are not. We're bringing it to you because it's the first one we received and we want to make sure that you're aware of it.
What address in town were they looking at?
I believe they were looking at the old Opportunity Services building here off of the frontage road.
Okay.
It fits in all the guidelines of the zoning?
That's correct.
So.
Yeah, I think when we were looking at the map, at planning and zoning, pretty much the only area that's gonna be within allowable zone is gonna be right here, on the way here to City Hall.
And the south side.
Oh, and of course, south side too, there's a commercial district over there.
Yeah, we are limited to that, kind of that core.
Was that with or without the suggested change, Paul, that you had suggested at planning and zoning?
I think that would still be acceptable, yeah.
Okay, 'cause would that, was that, the suggestion made was a 1,000 feet? Would that, was that suggestion in congruence with state laws and rules?
No, Mr. Scheib indicated that he didn't feel like that was gonna be able to be done, because it overstepped the state statute. But, when it came to daycares, but yeah, otherwise, it wouldn't be an issue. And we did do some measurements, even at the 1,000 feet, it would still be a qualifying property. So we know that there is a limited number of them. One thing that's exempted, just so you're aware, is those CBD low potency, those are not covered with this, so they don't have the same graphical limitations or geographic limitations. So I guess if there's any questions, we'll take those. Otherwise, having brought it to you, we'd be looking for some kind of direction from council, whether to approve either at a staff level, if you direct us to, or if the council would like to take this through and make a motion.
Have we typically done this with other liquor and smoke shops? Have we brought that to council?
Yeah, typically, we have the permits going to your consent agenda each year as their renewals come due for liquor and for the cigarette licenses.
Handle those the same, maybe?
I would make it the same.
Sure. I think going forward, that would be as we would, and I mean, I'm not necessarily expecting a lot of these businesses, but I think we would, as those annual renewals would come up, typically, we would include it in your packet at that time.
And I would have staff review application, make sure it fits in all the guidelines.
Yeah.
And remind me, did we restrict the number that we were gonna give out?
No, the city council last year decided not to restrict the number.
Okay.
Because of those limited spaces to put them.
Okay, and we're not allowed to deny the application, right, assuming it meets all the requirements?
That's my understanding of the state statute.
That's what I thought, okay. Yeah, I think if we follow the same procedure we do for a liquor license and a tobacco license, that makes sense.
So would that be a motion to approve this one, then, or?
I'll make the motion to approve.
Second.
Ryan, thank you, Brian. Any other discussion?
So then, moving forward, when we do those annual renewals, we'll include it in your packet at that time. But like I said, just wanted to bring this one to you, kind of, because it's the first one we've seen, so.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Pose.
Thank you.
Motion carries. All right, up next, health insurance.
Well, at our last meeting, we were fortunate to have Mr. Singer here to present, and, you know, he kind of ran through the numbers. Since then, we did receive a few more, I believe it, which one was it, Linda? The Medica one came in.
Yeah.
As you can see, that definitely is not gonna be the most cost-effective. So we do have a spreadsheet included in here that kind of gives you an idea of what the numbers will look like on the rates, the cost to the city, including those monthly premiums and the HSA contributions. Anyway, so that information's there. You know, I think it's certainly up to the council how you'd like to take direction on that. You know, we looked at, there's a couple that seem like it's, my opinion, it falls between that 34 or the 42 in terms of what you want to see the deductibles at. Relatively close in terms of quality for the employee, but that's certainly up to the council. Whichever you decide, the lowest cost one, you know, would be that 42 single 84 family deductible plans. We do need to get some direction from council. We have the, I believe that's next week, we have the insurance roundup scheduled for staff.
Open enrollment starts November 1st, too.
It was going to move up 350 no matter what, correct?
Correct.
Yep.
Yeah, it would have been that $3,050, even the identical plan would have been that $3,050 single, and then $6,100 family deductible.
So.
This didn't change the HSA at all? You guys, we had talked about HSA last time, didn't we?
It changes the FSA because, or the HSA because this thing is put in a half.
Okay.
Of that.
Oh, I see it now, so I'm sorry, thank you. So
So you're saying the one with the $4,200 deductible, single, $8,400 family, even with the HSA allotment is the cheapest?
Based on the numbers, those, that's what it appears, that's the apparent.
And it's gonna go up anywhere from 12% to 14%?
Yeah, I mean, it looks like, you know, on average, we would expect it to be kind of the middle, because obviously we have some that are families, some that are single. So between 11.68 and 13.64, so say 12% on average, maybe.
Because the medical insurance alone on that plan goes up either 10.33 or 7.24%.
Well, yeah, it's hard. I mean, you don't want to see the deductibles to go up, but I mean, as the Affordable Care Act does, it does go up anyways. But this would be the best value for the city. It's a little harder on the employee per se, but then they have the options to contribute to their HSA also.
HSA is capped, correct?
What's that?
Yes, HSAs are capped for.
$7,500 this year, I think they.
A little more.
Okay, I don't know if they've changed that. I think that one.
And then if you're over 55, you can put an extra $1,000 in.
Yeah. And if you don't use it, then it stays over for.
It carries, yep, it rolls over.
$8,550 for families, $4,300 for individuals.
Okay, $8,550 for families.
So we'd be providing almost half of the maximum. We raise the deductible, but then provide half of basically the maximum HSA.
So they, yeah, they're actually gaining.
Yeah, so their out-of-pocket would be $4,200 for the family, and it would be, you know, $2,100 for the single.
Yeah, and if they went to the single, their out-of-pocket, if you did the $3,400, would be, you know, 70.
$1,700 and $3,400.
Any comments, questions?
The fact that both have the HSA covering the single deductible, is that kind of a wash then for the user?
What's that?
Is it kind of a wash for the user, so it's not, if you're on the single plan, it's $3,400 as the HSA match that the city gives?
If you're on the single plan, it's half of that deductible, so it'd be $1,700.
Okay.
It's column M there is how much that the city provides. So no matter which option we choose, we cover half the deductible.
That's right.
All right.
Right.
Thank you.
But if they don't use the deductible, it's just extra money, right, so for them.
For medical costs down the road, tell them.
For medical costs down the road, so.
Yeah.
Personally, I like that better, but not everybody might.
Non-taxed.
I guess I'd make the motion to go with, what are we calling that, option two for Blue Cross?
The $4,284?
Yes.
We have a motion to switch insurance to the $4,200 single, $8,400 family deductible. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay.
All right, over to staff.
And if you could let us know kind of roughly the number when people sign up, see where we're at.
Yeah, if you want to let us know, you're asking for how many are single, how many are family?
Well, I'd like to see the percentage increase, you know, because you'll be single and family.
Sure.
Just to see where we fall in there.
Keep track of how many are each. That'll be, we'll get that, we'll know that number by the end of the year, so.
Just curiosity, it's.
A lot of times it doesn't change much.
Right.
Because we have 18 single, 15 family.
Yep.
It's really, unless somebody drops or somebody does something else, it may go down for some people because they have kids graduating off the program.
Mm-hmm.
But good.
Sure.
All right. The other item that you have in there that actually was kind of a late add there is the health insurance option.
Linda has identified potentially some cost savings. Life insurance, sorry, that's what I meant. And Linda, I'll let you talk about that.
Yes. Less than what we're paying Unum now for a $10,000 life insurance policy, we can go with Hartford, right? I was dealing with so many different insurance companies. We can go with Hartford and get a $25,000 life insurance policy for less. The city pays for that totally. It is, however, COBRA eligible, so when somebody quits or anything else, they can take that as portable. But it is over half, and it's less cost. We don't have to buy anything else from Hartford to get this program, and Unum won't kick us off for dropping one of their programs.
And this $25,000 policy for $4.375, is that,
That's a month.
A month, that's what, it didn't say that, so that's where I was curious.
That's a month.
So I didn't know if it was weekly, monthly, so.
And is this just a benefit the city covers, or is this an opt-in from the?
City covers.
Okay. Seems like a no-brainer then.
Yeah.
I just wanted you to make sure that, you know, if.
Do you need a motion on that?
Yeah, that sounds good, so.
I would make the motion that we switch insurance policy as long as there's no greater effect. Like, as you said, they won't kick us off for other things, so I would make that motion to switch to Hartford for that $25,000 policy.
Second.
We have motion second, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye, opposed? Thank you, everybody. Up next, on old business, is, I think we'll just, it's about a public hearing for an appeal.
We've got three items in there, Mr. Mayor.
We did.
The first item, and maybe Ian, you can bring these up in Dropbox. The first item is the email letter of appeal from Mr. Norrie. I included that so you can see that was received on October 9th. The second item is criteria that a council should consider before granting an appeal, before even granting the appeal hearing. The last item would be a resolution that would order a hearing. And I'm interested in the city attorney's feedback too, a little bit on what she thinks would be prudent. I guess the thought I've had is, you know, this is a hearing, he's asking the council to reconsider its own decision. So it's not a reconsideration of planning and zoning or a staff decision. It occurred in September. And as far as I know, circumstances have not changed. So before we would even grant a hearing, and this is just my thought process, I'm kind of laying out, like I said, interested in what the city attorney has to say. You know, I guess to me, you know, before we grant that, we do the publication, the notice, we spend the money that was paid for this, letters, all that. I'm not sure the likelihood of the appeal being granted, and I don't want that to be just another frustration for either us or for the applicant. But I don't know if you've got any feedback on that.
Yeah, if he's requested an appeal, we have to provide him with that appeal pursuant to our own ordinances. So, furthermore, he's claiming that the lawsuit that the city has initiated against him for the injunction to remove the fence that's in violation of the ordinance, he's claiming that we can't proceed with that because of this appeal. But his appeal relates only to the city's action to revoke his conditional use permit. Our lawsuit doesn't have anything to do with revoking that conditional use permit. It's entirely related to an action about the offense because it's in violation of the ordinance. While related, his appeal does not stay the city's action in the lawsuit, which is what he's trying to claim. But he is entitled to the appeal, so I do think that we should proceed with setting the hearing date for the appeal.
All right, sounds
good. That's my recommendation.
Him finishing the fence after we voted to reconsider his permit, did that have any bearing on any of this? Could it nullify his appeal because he finished it after the fact on his own?
No. No. I, yeah, the, in my opinion, he's, we've brought the, we've now revoked his conditional use permit. If he wants to appeal that regardless of what's happened, he's entitled to that appeal.
Yeah.
All right, well, then we have the resolution in your packet. It would be ordering the hearing for the 19th of November.
So are we expecting written evidence, appeals from the applicant to consider, or is it going to be verbal at the podium for 5 minutes? How exactly is the procedure expected to be handled?
I would, he can submit either or both. And I, he would, like a regular public hearing, I don't think he would be limited to 5 minutes. I think that we would want to listen to his appeal in its entirety.
But there wouldn't be a back and forth? Would it be a, he gets his say and then we get our discussion?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just like any public hearing, they're allowed to talk, we close the public hearing, then the council discusses. Just like a planning zoning when there's a public hearing.
Okay.
You open it, the public speaks, you close it.
Remind me of the date of the appeal will happen.
November 19th.
Next council meeting.
Next council meeting, six.
Yep.
No. It's going to be in council chambers. Per our ordinance, states any public hearing is in council chamber. So I would take a motion to approve the resolution calling for a public hearing for the appeals of Mr. Norrie's conditional use permit revocation.
I'll make the motion.
Thank you, Brian. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Ryan. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion carries. Send those letters out and notify everybody. And
yep.
Next, new business, 2026 fee schedule. First look.
Do you want me to take that? I sent it out to all the department heads and all the, I've gotten a few back. So what is red in there is the new requests. The cemetery, our gravedigger is retiring, but he also increased his rate, and he will keep doing it until he finds a replacement. So that's why the cemetery ones are going up. So I don't have all of them. This is just a first look. But if you have any questions on any of the rates that are changed right now, I can answer the questions.
Yeah, I think the only one thing that stood out to me was the golf cart permits going up.
And Josh may be able to answer.
Yeah, is that purely because it's taking more time administratively to issue these and check on things than it has? Because I just want to make sure we're not like raising the fee because, you know, we can make a little extra there, because that might just drive people to just not register, and that would be worse, I think. So
it is a time consuming process to do the registration, so just keeping up with the increased wages.
Okay, I would just ask if maybe 35 instead of 40 on that, just to try and keep the increase a little. If
you got to look at it, it's a 3-year, and you got to look at how much time is spent.
I understand, but I also don't want people to look at the price, you know, $40 or $50 in next year and be like, yeah, I'll just not get caught
until they get a ticket. Yeah, and then the ticket's $100 and something.
What's the ticket cost for an unregistered golf cart?
It'd probably just be like a base $25 to $30 fee plus whatever the surcharges for the courts are.
So
you could get a permit a lot cheaper.
Okay.
We're not out to make money. We're out to cover our costs. And
it is a 3-year, so that is one thing to keep in mind too. So you're looking at going from $10 to $13 per year. So it's not necessarily a deal breaker, but. Certainly, this will all be up for, you know, a vote later this year when we have this finalized.
Sure.
You know, you can see what's been submitted to Linda right now, and then I don't know that we need to significant changes at the Aquatic Center. I think Park and Rec Committee will probably be discussing that in November.
Well, as we get more numbers...
It'll come back.
Yeah. Perfect. Okay, thank you. Personnel policy handbook updates. First look.
Did you take that one too, Linda?
Yep. Again, I went through the league's model personnel policy, compared it to ours. There is some changes. There is the Minnesota Paid Leave Act. There are some things that I think I left the league's wording in there because it's not final yet. So this is just a first look, and once I get the final answers, it'll come back again. But it mirrors the league's policy.
Didn't look like too many changes.
No, there isn't a lot of changes. We update this, like, I try to do it every year, so there isn't a lot of changes.
There's 3 pages of stuff inserted.
Well, they affect the Minnesota Paid Leave.
I know. 3 pages, I think, is a lot of changes, but, I mean, it's just, I assume, copy and pasted
mostly
from...
one page.
From the...
or the one topic.
Yeah, it's all from one topic. I agree.
Okay.
So it's just informational.
Thank you.
When are you looking for approval for that?
Probably in December.
In December.
The second meeting in December.
Okay. Thank you. Up next, an ordinance removal of Section 55.11.
This is another thing, just trying to clean up some. I think there will be more ordinance things, but Jared has been asking that this one be removed, and it didn't get done the last ordinance update that we had.
On that, all these houses that have those load management controllers on their house, is somebody going to remove them?
I don't think so, no.
So?
It would leave a hole, so I think it's...
Right.
But they still powered, so I mean, are people losing a minute amount of electricity by it being powered up?
That's a question I can ask.
Because if it is, then I would like it to find a way to disconnect them.
Sure.
At the property, even if they're there. I just don't want to see people paying a fee for something that's doing nothing. I mean, it might not be a lot,
I mean,
but...
you're not paying fees for
it. No, but I mean, your electricity rate.
It is using electricity, certainly. I can check with Jared on that.
And it might be so minute that it doesn't matter, but I mean, it's interesting. It would be like, I like to know.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay.
You can check with Jared on that.
Perfect.
Frankly, Dan, if it's some, it matters, so
yeah,
I agree
yeah.
with you.
Yeah, so I'm just looking at every option, because that's why people put them on originally. When the system did work, it saved them money. Now it's... All right. Thank you. Up next is the 2025-2026 snow hauling contract.
There aren't a lot of changes from last year. We haven't actually utilized the services in the last couple of years, but right now the forecast is for a more significant winter, so not that we want to, but we want to be prepared for that.
Mm-hmm.
So looking like we've got a quote there from the folks over at IMES.
Okay. All right. So we need a motion?
Yeah, that's right.
I would look for a motion to approve the snow hauling contract.
Make a motion to approve.
Thank you, Ryan. Do we have a motion? Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Mel. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you, everybody. Up next, we have a request from IBEW in your packet about Minnesota paid leave.
I mean, I could speak to this. You know, we received this... request from Todd Ingalls. It's demand to bargain the terms and conditions of the new paid leave act. So I let him know that we would be talking about it. State law indicates that the additional costs can be split between the employer and the employee. The IBW union is requesting that the city pay 80% of that and that the employee pay 20%. They're also requesting that they be allowed to top off their pay with any portion of their wage that the plan would not cover using vacation or sick leave. That's their request. Are there
command, I guess. I don't know that there's any reason that we have to do that. State law is pretty clear. If you would like to do that, that's up to the council. We've been budgeting for a 50-50 split of the new tax increase for that insurance program. However, we can make a change to the budget if that's needed.
I'd be interested to see what they're willing to give up for that.
So
that's kind of my thought process, too.
There are tax implications that I don't think they're taking into account of this proposal.
Right, they would have to pay taxes on that, actually, as I don't know if it's considered a gift or how it's considered exactly in the new tax code, but that's true.
Well, and then on top of it, because I did a lot of reading into this, it also changes how much they'll get taxed on the benefit as well. So it is pretty sizable tax implications if the city takes on more of it, that if their members use it, it'll end up hurting them in the long run.
Well, I would guess right now I'm in favor of staying with what the state law says of 50-50. I don't see any reason to go 80-20. I don't see any benefit either way. As Brian stated, it might actually be hurtful going that way for the, you know, and far as using sick or vacation time to cover their difference, why not? It's theirs. It would take it off our books. It'd be one less liability, you know. If they only get covered to a certain percent and they need to cover their full value, I'm all in favor of that.
Yeah, I don't mind the top up either.
Yeah, and I think typically, I think that from what I've read, it sounds like the max benefit next year is like $1,450 to $1,490. I don't know if
something
quite determined yet, but so it's going to range between 50 and 80% for most employees of how much they would be paid to that paid leave. And then I think what they'd be looking at, would they be looking at, you know, topping it off with that 20% or that 50% would be through their sick accrual, which in a way would be beneficial to us because we're continuing to extend those health care benefits, and that would allow them to pay that health care benefit out of that time itself. So
One question I have, and I don't know, when they get paid, is it like a disability where it's they've pre-taxed, so what you get is you don't pay tax on that value?
I don't think so. I don't know, Linda, is that...
Or do they have to claim it as income and then pay tax?
It's a new program and some of the stuff.
I don't know how the state's going to work it. If you take short-term disability, they do get a 1099 for what they paid you.
Okay.
And you can, when you take your short-term disability, you can opt to take taxes out of that so you don't have to pay that many taxes, but you will have to claim that money. I'm assuming...
So it'd be similar.
Real similar, but I don't know that.
Yeah, and we probably won't know for a while. I'm sure they're still finalizing, but... Okay.
Any other feedback from anyone else on that? So what I will respond to him and let him know that council is planning on following state statute in this case, but that we're comfortable with that allowing them to use their sick or vacation time to fill that gap. Do we want to restrict it to just sick time, or does it matter?
I would say sick time first to get that off the books, and then if they run out of sick time, then they can go to vacation. But I would like to see that sick time usage go down because we have quite a few people have accrued hours. So we could use that up first.
Do you know if there's anything in the state plan that would, does it say that they use their sick time first, or is that something we can really require or not?
It doesn't require us to. We can't make them use any time. If they wanted to just take the Minnesota paid leave and that's what they're going to live on, then... We can't make them top it off.
But they would still have to pay their part of the health care insurance.
They would still have
We're required to extend them the benefit, but they'd have to pay 100% of it then instead of having it deducted out of their wage.
Yep. Yep.
Okay, but if they elect to take the top off, can we force them to do sick time
and then
to top off before vacation?
I don't know if we can. Can we force them to take sick time or not? Or we can ask them to, or we can.
If they want to, we can say, okay, if you want to top it off, first you use sick time, then you use vacation.
Okay, so that's permissive. Okay.
It's really up to them, because if they don't want to top it off, they don't have to, and they can just write us a check every month that they're gone for their insurance or anything that they want to keep.
Okay. All right, well, that's what I will forward back to them. So thank you very much for that feedback.
All right, next, administrator's report.
All right.
Well, as you can see out here at City Hall, the booster station, the foundation for that, and some of the connections have been dug in, so that's been fun to see. They got a lot of work started before it froze, at least, so that's good. So pluses to the state revenue collection, included update from the state of Minnesota. Their financial outlook has improved, so that's good to hear. Hopefully that'll make sure that the things that they're budgeting don't require additional tax increases at the state legislature. So hopefully they'll have that forecast out in December. That'll be what they'll use the first half of the legislative session next year. We began our negotiations with People's Co-op, meeting with them this week. So we've done several acquisitions, as I detailed there, with from Excel the last couple of years. The one with People's is going to be a little different because we have some actual customers. There's 356 customers in that acquisition that we'll be working with. Right now, we're hoping to be able to close on that in quarter three of 26. So we'll hopefully have an agreement for you by the end of the year, but then it'll be a couple of months. They have to. We probably 2 months of notifications to the residents, so they're all aware of it, and then also take some time for the technical part of the work to be done. We have to do some switching so that the new feeder line will probably be taking most of the load on the south side. So anyway, just to give you an idea on that. Fire pension numbers. Those numbers were updated, and with the improved performance from the stock market this year, I'm comfortable recommending that the number be moved up to 3,700. The interim number we set earlier was based on 6 month performance through the summer. However, the fire chiefs provided those updated numbers, so if the council is comfortable with that, I think that I'd be comfortable with recommending that number. We did agree that we wanted to make sure that it's fully funded so that in case of economic issue with the stock market, because that's what drives their performance, their pensions, that it would be at least 120% funded. I feel like I'm being very conservative, but I do think that number in 26 could be moved up to 125%.
I thought we talked 125 this year. I thought that was the number that we mentioned. Not 120, I thought it was 125.
Yeah, the number I recall is 120. That's what the council had set.
I thought it was 125, but...
You know, it's up to the council. You know, you guys make the rules, but I'm just detailing what my thoughts are on
okay.
that.
Sorry.
I do think that earlier this year in April, we saw, you know, almost a 22% drop, you know, during the initial tariff discussion. So I'm always leery of it, you know, basing a lot of things off of the stock market because it does have so much variability. And it seems like economically, just the feeling I have is that things may be slowing down a little bit. So anyway, I'd be looking for action after my report for the council on that. Parking rec updates, a lot of good things. We got our final pool numbers in, so I've input those into the budget. So we had operating costs that were lower this year. We also had revenue decreases. They were kind of tandem with the weather that we had in June especially. We saw that the utilization was down because of cold, rainy weather. We had almost, I think, 7 days that we lost in June, so a big chunk of that month to some closures. But hopefully we'll have continue to make improvements over there. Ben and I have been working on the surfacing. We know there was some pitting on the surface in the lap pool. Part of that's just because water tends to sit there over the wintertime. It gets in those cracks, and it tends to freeze-thaw, unfortunately. But we're going to be watching that more closely this year and also, like I said, doing some resurfacing. Compass. There'll be some increased costs there. Their tariff recovery is going down, so there'll be some increased costs to Casson and to every other city in that group. So I had some feedback that I thought they could look at some expenditure reductions as well, but the rest of the board felt like the budget that they had was where they wanted to stay for the time being. So we're going to be looking at that for next year, about $3,000 more a month. That will be paid out of the electric fund. You've got the updates on planning and zoning. Thanks to Superintendent for coming and presenting. We appreciate that. Mayor for a Day contest is coming up. Let's see, I've got a couple other things I just wanted to highlight. Feedback from department heads. We're looking at starting an employee wellness committee. I've authorized the department heads to meet and to discuss this and to assign a representative from each of their departments. And Linda, thank you for spearheading that. The goal here is to... First meeting Monday. The goal is to try to reduce our, we want healthier employees. That's what we want. Also, if that means that we can reduce our utilization of the health insurance, that's going to be beneficial to the whole city because it'll be savings to the employees, lower, hopefully flatten out those deductible increases, but also be, you know, improvements for the budget. So I think that that's going to be a really good thing. I don't know what they're going to decide what they want to do for 2026, but I think that you know, we've got an opportunity to do some interesting things. Police vehicles. I've had an inquiry from a council member to talk about reducing the fleet size. I think that's something that we'll be certainly looking at in the budget process, because we don't have that many officers who are living in town anymore. In fact, I'm not sure that we have any officers that are living in town. So one of the
In town.
Well, I know we might do currently, but not, well, you're right. We do have a couple, but limited number of officers in town. So council member interested in seeing if we can reduce that number of vehicles to line up better with folks. So we'll be taking a look at that. And then I wanted to put a really big thank you out to Kayla from City Hall. Over the last 2 months, Jessica was out for an extended period of time, and Kayla did a great job filling in and helping out in utility billing especially. You know, that hasn't always been a smooth process, but with our new software that's been fully implemented now from TANList, she got those bills out, and she actually got them out earlier than usual. So, I mean, we had some calls from people saying, well, why did I get my bill a week early? Well, our goal is to try and get, instead of a week late, we want to get the bill to you a week early. So really big thank you to her. She did a very good job, along with all the other responsibilities that she has. So I appreciate that. And the other employees at City Hall stepping up to help fill in for Jessica while she was out. So those are the things I have for tonight. Any questions anyone has for me?
Actually, on the billing software, have we gotten it to the not using the credit card yet? Still working on that?
Well, Jessica's back now, so that is like her number one.
Okay.
Outside of the billing, the monthly billing. You know, that's a project she's been working on for the next 6 weeks.
Because we want to make sure we give notification while
we're absolutely. That's right.
Okay. Just so we didn't forget.
Nope. She's back today. She was back and ready to work. So I told her after the end of the day, I said, you're sure you're going to come back tomorrow? And she said, yeah.
That's back. Good to hear.
Otherwise, I'd be looking for action on that pension for the Fire Department Relief Association.
Moving the pension number up to $3,700.
That's right.
Make that motion.
I'll second it.
Motion and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay.
Thank you.
Up next, engineers report.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor and Council. A holdover from last council meeting, so there is a RCA that we reviewed last council meeting and last council meeting's council packet, but ultimately looking at 8th Avenue bike lanes from our 2nd Avenue Southwest to 5th Avenue Northwest. That is a corridor that's underutilized with respect to parking, so the discussion was to eliminate one or both sides of the road's parking and convert that into a painted bike lane. Dodge County did recommend both sides of preferred option one, and then you know, we discussed it. It's going to close a nice gap in our pedestrian facilities. We talked about the comp plan and the desire for the planning document that shows a desire for trail in that corridor, and then I provided a figure that showed how that would look, a little schematic. So I think there was some good discussion. I think we ultimately tabled it and said we'd bring it back tonight. So again, I'm just looking for direction on moving forward with working with the county to get it into their construction plans, because they are planning construction next year. So I'll pause there and see where things go. And I guess there's a do nothing option too, so we kind of have three options, right? Do nothing, leave it as parking, bike lane on one side, parking on the other, or bike lanes on both sides. So
you know my feelings. They haven't changed.
Okay. What was, we had discussed about crossing, if we did it just on one side, you know.
Yeah, I think we would cross from the north end at the trail and move everything to the west and then run the bike lane down the west side. There's already a portion there of those townhouses that already have no parking through a short corridor of the corridor, or short spot within the corridor. And then the east side is likely utilized more parking during like ball games, that ball field and library there. So I think that was the conversation,
yeah,
is cross them over there. So.
And then it would just stop down by the Lions Park?
Yep, it'd be the entrance to right at the water tower there where the trail starts.
Where the trail starts.
We did talk about bringing it all the way to the roundabout at 57, knowing that now that the brewery's picked up again, maybe there's going to a reason to not put it there so they can utilize,
mm-hmm,
that for parking. So Again, we're trading things out, right? It's parking on the road, which we noted was underutilized, to utilize it in a pedestrian, more friendly manner, and that was something that was on the comp plan. So when we have opportunities, we bring it forward to council, and I don't know, I personally have a strong opinion one way or another.
Sure.
But, yeah, so it's more of a council, what do we want to see by our streets, and a little bit of trade-off, so. And we have not reached out to the property owners. I mean, a lot of times, to me, the proof is in the pudding when we see it on all the aerials, and I mentioned how underutilized it was through the corridor, and we see that in the aerial, so, you know, we don't need to go talk to property owners and say, do you use the parking? We already kind of know that, but I'm happy to have a public meeting, you know, and bring that to them if you'd like to, if you are planning a change, so.
Someone who's lived in Northwest for 30-some years, I think it's a great idea to have a path. So I'd like to at least look at one side, and we talked about the west side, correct? So.
Any other input from, as Brian states, he wants none?
Doing one side allows for parking on the other. The west side also has the longer driveways. I went over and looked, they do have longer driveways than the east side, so they have enough room for multiple vehicles. Even if they throw a elaborate celebration, they have parking.
I could be swayed into one side, but you won't get me on two.
No, and I agree, two wouldn't work very well along with the next to the park and ball field. As long as we can, so, you know, sounds like the west side would be the best way to do it. And then the trail's right there, it's just crossing over there at the intersection, which is, people do it now.
It's a stop condition north and southbound,
yeah.
So.
Well, at Fifth, you'd cross over,
yep.
You'd crosswalk,
yep.
There.
I think so.
I would make the motion to have our west side of that street done and signed and painted.
I'll second.
And second. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, there you have your guidance.
Good direction, appreciate it. Thank you. That's all I had, unless you have anything else for me.
That is all, thank you.
Okay.
Okay, roundtable discussion. This is time to chat a little.
Sure,
okay,
so
yes.
At our last meeting, there was a request to discuss the liquor store with the retirement opportunity to kind of discuss where things are at. So included in your packet, I've got a couple items, the operating transfers from Black Mountain, and then just a little bit different write-up of that. wait for that to come up here while I... those items basically show what's been transferred from the liquor store over the last 15 years or so. And since I've been here, that number has been very small. I think to a certain degree, you know, Kathy was waiting for her remodel.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, one of the thoughts I had was if we wanted to, we talked about, you know, park funding and stuff like that. I think one thing the council could do is set a policy where, you know, 50% of the profits of the store less the contribution that goes to fund the council's salaries could be utilized for putting in that park fund, basically topping off where we know we have shortfalls. And that would just be something we would do automatically instead of having to, you know, and I know in a previous community where I worked, the liquor store, the city liquor store, that was what it was utilized for, was really for, I would say, park wants, things that, you know, maybe council, the public came to them with something that was unbudgeted and said, hey, you know, what about extra modular or slide or other equipment like that or changes there? And that's what they typically utilize their liquor store profits for, is for improving the park system for the children. So I guess that would be something I would recommend looking at is just making a policy where we designate a certain percentage each year and we just make that transfer automatically. And then I think that would be good because it would help to show the value of the facility for our community even more than it is now.
Yeah, as you can see, year after year, there's been substantial profit from the liquor store. It's been a benefit to the community. It's helped. I do like the option of where it's set in stone where it's going, so we don't have to decide and try to get it now that it's all fully renovated. So, and the parks is underutilized right now, so as far as funding, it'd be a great place to spend it. You know, when we say parks, maybe even part of it goes to the aquatic center. If you have an upgrade there that you have to do, I mean, that's...
Sure.
I think it's a good idea.
I would agree with that.
Okay. I've got some points against the liquor store. I'm going to start with, this is probably the best time for us to liquidate it. The building is renovated, as you said. Like, capital improvements have been done. We've got a manager that's been the best manager we could ask for leaving. We don't know how well a new manager is going to be. If we sell the property and the business, there's probably no better time to do it than now, value-wise. Secondly, I don't like that the government is competing with private business. I think that selling liquor is a private venture and is something that we should let private business handle that demand. Thirdly, having the liquor store as a liability, not just because, you know, you're selling alcohol and the regulations we have to deal with that, but secondly, that not every year may be a good year for sales, right? So if we're expecting, you know, a certain amount of money to come out of the liquor store and we don't get it, you know, then we're still short funded anyway. And then additionally, I would say that I don't know how much it's worth, but looking at these numbers, we've transferred $16,000 a year for the last 6 years. So looking at our 4M fund at 4.1%, we could get that same amount of money in a 4M fund for $400,000. So if we can sell that business and property and put those funds in a 4M fund, we can get the same return as we've been getting over the last 6 years. If we go back through the entire history of the sheet, we've had some pretty large transfers in there. $70,000 to the library, I see, $35,000 entry monument, I'm not exactly sure what that is, and there was a $50,000 transfer back in 2010. So just dividing everything out, that's $26,000 a year on average that we've received from the liquor store. Again, using a 4M fund, that means $650,000 capital. So I think I have no idea what the business plus property would be worth, but if we're anywhere in the $400,000 to $650,000 range we could sell it for, we could get the same amount of money without having the risk and having employees and the health insurance cost, and still set that money aside for the parks. And it would be, you know, very consistent money every year too, and not just a 50% of whatever profit happened to be that year.
So part of the property, as though you're going to have to somehow split it because you can't sell the parking lot with the business because you're going to lose all your downtown parking.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to take that in consideration. So if you do sell it, you're going to sell a minimal amount. Now, is that building worth as much because without the parking lot? So you got to look at that. That's one big option.
I mean,
the other option is...
parking needs to be available for the business because it's still public parking, right?
You only have to have one, whatever the designated spot per size, so...
Mm-hmm.
So the rest you have to keep, so you'd have to split because the city's going to have to keep that. You need that parking.
I don't disagree.
And then you're going to have to transfer somewhere. You got to pay the council's payments. As Tim noted, that liquor store pays all that. That's got to come then out of the
mm-hmm.
funds. So that brings your profit down out of your... And your 4M, what's the odds that it's going to hit the same amount of growth every year that you're talking? You can't guarantee that. You were stating that you'd be at $400,000 to $650,000, you'd make that $16,000 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
There's no guarantee in that either. Investments are not a guarantee.
And we would expect interest rates to go down, so the interest that's generated by that probably will go down some.
Yep.
I don't necessarily think it'll go down to the zero.
No, but
it was, you know, 5 years.
But they're talking in October 29th, the Feds are meeting again.
That's true.
And they said they're dropping it, and then they said they're meeting again before the end of the year. That's another drop. So you got to look at that. Interest goes up and down, too. There's no guarantee on that.
Right, but if we don't have the property, we'll never have to do renovations again. We'll never have to repair the roof. We don't have any of those capital costs that we'll have to deal with in the future. Additionally, we will be able to collect property tax on the sold building, which we aren't getting right now, for whatever that, again, whatever value it is. I don't know what it's worth. you know, we'd have to look into that, but, I think this is, if we're ever gonna get out of the business of selling alcohol, this is the best time to do it. There would be no better time.
I will echo Paul's concern, right where the negative side, Paul, of a new manager and finding a good new manager and how much of a nightmare it could turn into if we can't do that. And then, I guess, the other thing I would say is, if a dispensary does come to town, that could take away some business. Like, I've read articles that say liquor sales are down because marijuana sales are up, so something to think about.
I would love to know where people are trading drinking alcohol for smoking or consuming marijuana-based products. Speaking as someone that does not consume what I jokingly refer to as the devil's lettuce or its byproducts, I just that statement kind of actually caught me off guard and blew my mind.
I've read articles, and I also know some personal experiences. Obviously, I will not name names here, but of people who have decided to, if not quit liquor altogether, definitely have gone down in consumption.
I would be curious to know what percentage of Kathy's or of our liquor store sales are coming from the CBD beverages that are sold there.
Sure. I mean, I can give you an idea just off the top of my head. Having reviewed the financials, I'd say year-to-date, probably about 5%. Right now, no, that is a growth area.
Right.
So that is probably the only growth area, because I think, colloquially speaking, I've read articles, but I follow the market. I mean, beer sales are flat, declining. Certain types of beer are better than others, obviously. Wine sales seem to be pretty flat, too. You know, she's very good about keeping her net margins good, and, you know, I don't disagree with Paul that you want to sell the business when it's, if you're going to sell it at all, you want to sell it when it's profitable, right, because it generates your greatest return. We did have 22 applications, and we did 7 interviews over 3 days, and asking those same questions after the, you know, the 7th interview, you're ready to be done with, you know, what do you think about, you know, liquor and the municipal. I do think we do have a good candidate. So I could see both sides of the argument, the council's, you know, council, not an argument, discussion we're having, you know, because, yeah, I mean, it can be successful, it can be useful. I think we need to make sure that we're showcasing that, and, we're, you know, that's why, after I thought about it, like, making sure that money's going towards the park system makes a lot of sense to me, because that's going to be beneficial for our kids. You know, like I said, I also see the, you know, the drawbacks. I think at such a point in time, when I felt like the sales were deteriorating at a point where it made it financially imprudent for us to continue operating the store, I would make that recommendation to council, and I would have no problem doing that. I'm not sure. I don't think we're at that point right now. However, certainly with a new manager, the next 6 months would be telling and seeing how it goes for them. And as I said, I'm open. I see the positives. I can also see the benefits of, I mean, it's one less thing for me to manage.
Right.
So, you know, so I would say maybe that's where I would be at, is let's take a look at the numbers in 6 months and see how they track. If it looks like it may not be as financially viable going forward, then we can certainly reappraise at that time. But that's just my opinion. That's as I've thought about doing all those interviews. I'd like to see, because Kathy has done a very good job about inventory control, making sure her gross profit margins are. She's been very active in the community, and that's something when we talked to the applicants, we said, hey, we need you to be, you know, they're on Main Street. We talked about having a vibrant Main Street. We want someone who's involved. Christmas and Casson, the Chamber of Commerce, these things are important to us because we live in this community. It's not just a business standalone by itself, which is what it would become if we did sell it. So there are some maybe intangible benefits to it, too.
And also, I don't know too many other liquor stores that put that amount of money back into their community, privately owned liquor stores. So, and given the size of it, do you really think that somebody like an Andy's or an Apollo is going to want to move into that location? I mean, we spent money on renovating the facility to enable it to maximize its profits, and I don't know why we would push to, I mean, I get your point, sell it when it's at its maximum value. But I think, I agree with Tim that I think we should at least give it 6 months to see how it goes. And I'm just not sure we would get as much out of the sale of the facility itself as you think we would versus the amount of income that comes, that it generates as a liquor store.
How many employees do we have there?
We have 2 full-time employees, and I think there's 7 part-time employees right now.
I'm assuming a heavy percentage are residents that live in this town.
You know, I don't know the addresses of all of them. I know at least some of them do live in Casson.
We're right on the edge.
We can't guarantee that a company would buy it to sell alcohol in that facility anyway. Then we wouldn't have alcohol sales, and no matter which side of that aisle you're on, alcohol is going to be no matter where it wants to go. People can buy it in Rochester and Casson and Byron and Manorville, and it's still going to be here. But the purpose of having municipal liquor stores now to provide additional revenue and funds, and it is doing that at a fairly high level. And it has done that consistently over time. Getting rid of that revenue, they support local sports teams, kids baseball, all kinds of, they support so many different things in the community. It doesn't matter what we're selling, they're supporting and bringing in a revenue. Did we put all this money into it just to get rid of it? That's my concern. I don't see a point in selling the building right now. I think we can make more money long-term than we would short-term. So even though we might make more money short-term selling it and trying to invest it, we are going to make more long-term having that facility, even though maintenance costs will eventually come back again. I feel it's more beneficial to have it. I like Tim's idea of setting aside a specific dollar value or percent so that we can use that to support our parks or whatever area we decide as a council to do if we do that.
Tim, could I request staff look into how much they think we could sell it for?
Sure, I can certainly try and get a valuation. It may take a little while.
Of course.
I think we have to go through that process, but
I'd be surprised even if we did choose to sell it to that we would still have to hire somebody anyway, because I don't think we'd be able to get through all that by the time Kathy's gone anyway. So as for hiring somebody else, we need to keep the business operating. So I think we need to move forward with that.
Is there any concern with having this conversation and even continuing to look at selling it that it will hinder our ability to hire a person that wants to stick around if they feel we're thinking still of selling it?
I don't think so. You know, and you have it in your packet there, the gentleman that we're recommending. You know, he has a lot of experience in the industry. And I certainly would be very clear with him and say, you know, he recognizes that it's a municipal. He was very excited about the fact that it gives back the community, because in his business before, that was one of the things he highlighted that he liked about, sometimes he worked for Andy's Liquor in Rochester. They did an event, I think, for veterans. Is that right, Linda?
Mm-hmm.
And he really appreciated that aspect of it. I think, you know, it's an incentive if he's hired to tell him, you know, there's scrutiny. And we asked him that, you know, how do you deal with the general public? It's not just your liquor customer, but it's also residents now. It's your customers and your residents. He's going to have some scrutiny. Firstly, I'm going to be keeping a close eye on him. You know, he doesn't have a lot of capital planning, strategic planning experience, so be working very closely with him. So he's kind of out on his own a little bit more, and not necessarily on the operations of the facility. I don't want to micromanage him, but on the kind of the bigger picture stuff. And that's one of the bigger picture items, is just to be aware, hey, this, and that was one of the first questions that Linda asked, was the purpose of this, or maybe that was Kathy that asked, was the purpose of this is generate revenue and profit for the city to be able to turn back. I'm very cognizant of that. I think it could be very healthy for us to see, you know, how a new manager performs. Like I said, I can see both sides of your discussion points. Getting evaluation, that's certainly something we'll work on. That's not a bad idea for any kind of business to have an idea of what is the enterprise value. In essence, you know, we're looking at it as a standalone business you would in the private sector. And then, so it's something we can certainly find. I'm going to task Ian with that one, so that'll be good.
Yeah.
I appreciate this feedback. I think it's healthy for us to have that conversation, because, you know, it's just natural time for it to happen.
Would you look at the splitting of the partial parking lot
Yeah, I mean, I think, having discussed that with you, I think we'd work with the city attorney to probably do a lot split there, because we'd want to at least preserve probably the, one of the rows of parking, either the front row off the street or the back row, would have to be preserved for the building.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one would be a separate lot that would just be a city parking lot. Having spent the money on that improvement, we would want to make sure that's available for folks to use downtown and for the folks that live above some of the apartments downtown too, so. No, I appreciate the feedback, and I'll certainly be, you know, relaying that to the new manager, so they're, you know, aware of things.
On that note too, if you split the parking lot, you're going to have to signage for liquor store parking or that building parking and city parking, and then you're going to have extra patrol to be ticketing, because you would want to make sure you're saving that, our property, for the residents downtown, not for that store. So make sure you figure that into your cost.
Well, okay, I don't want to extend this conversation longer than it has to be, but
no,
what I would expect would happen is, if the facility was sold, someone will be buying, in essence, the demunicipalization of the business. So they probably will not keep that building. They will build a new building that's closer to the highway. I would anticipate that what would happen. We might even see more than one location pop-ups. You might have a less controlled environment for it. But yeah, I definitely take what you take in, you know, I take what you say into account there.
All right. Okay.
My other concern would be, if we do sell it to a private enterprise, are we now going to be stuck with yet one more empty building?
That's possible. Yeah.
It's a small facility.
Things to think about. All right, next, attorney, is there any items? Nothing? Thank you. Personnel, recommendation for a liquor store manager.
Sure, as I mentioned earlier, we did have those discussions and long review. We had those applicants, seven of them. After scoring those and reviewing them, we are recommending Matthew James Olson for the position. He comes to us from the private sector, having been a manager at Andy's Liquor in Rochester for many years. The background check came back clear. We're recommending starting at $37.69.
What is the start date, and is he going to have overlap with Kathy?
His start date is going to be next, well, provided it's approved by council, it will be the 27th of October. As I mentioned, you know, Kathy is going to be in and out quite a bit, but we do hope to have at least 2 weeks of crossover. Fortunately, the operation ability of it, I think, won't be an issue for this gentleman, because he has been a manager of a liquor store before. He'll be focusing on learning the point of sale operations and how that works with the scheduling of the deliveries and things like that.
I would make the motion to hire Mr. Olson.
I second.
Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, Mel. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Correspondence, if there's any...
Just want to highlight that number three, that did have the updated, those pension numbers for the fire department, if you want to actually see what I was looking at when I made that recommendation.
Is there any other concerns with correspondence, questions? If none, I'd take a motion to adjourn. Thank you, Ryan.
Second.
Thank you, Brian. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, everybody. All right.
Like the coughing.